In the evening, a brigade of cavalry came over the mountain riding into camp. They were the drunkest brigade that anyone had ever seen, officers and privates alike. David saw two privates trying to keep an officer on the saddle. He also saw officers trying to keep a private in the saddle. Some of these men had to lay over till the next day before they were able to follow up their command. David found out later that they had struck a distillery, but he had thought the distillery must have struck them. Reveille awoke the troops by 3 a.m. By 4 o'clock, they were on the road to Middleton. As the men were marching past General von Gilsa's headquarters, the general was standing at the gate. To salute him, the company commander ordered,
"Shoulder arms!"
At the exact same time, the general gave the command,
"Arms at will!"
And when the soldiers did not obey promptly, he repeated the command.
"Arms at will!"
Then jokingly, he made the remark,
"You need not care for your little major."
This caused quite a laugh in the ranks. The regiment was commanded on this campaign by the major, and his men all loved him.
June 28th, 1863. The weather was warm, and there were many fine residences along the pike. Cool, shady places were occupied by the residents. We would see the natives sit on their porches with standing collars, shoes blackened, and smoking cigars. It brought a fellow back to see how folks live in God's country, and what home comforts a fellow could have if he were only there. To be honest about this was the only day that I had the blues while I was in the Army. But it was a tramp, tramp all day long. No halt until near an hour before sunset.
Halt!
We were formed into platoons, front and closed up, and as I was pretty well in the advance of the column, and as the Hagerstown Pike has a downgrade into Frederick City, I had a grand view back over that column. The pike was packed full of infantry as far as I could see, and they were from 16 to 20 men abreast.
The gun barrels glistening in the evening sun made a sight never to be forgotten, and the troops kept on marching. The men began to feel hungry because they had breakfast between 3 and 4 in the morning, and all there was to eat was dry hardtack. The minutes turned into hours, and still on went the columns. Some general officers passed along the columns after dark. Everybody thought Howard and Harlow were among them. It was a steady marching and no halt until 11 o'clock p.m.
Halt!
The men were ready for the road a little after daylight on the following morning. The farther the army got north, the more loyal the people were. They met on the crossroads, great crowds of men, women, and children. The country people lined the roads, gazing in open-eyed wonder upon the long lines of infantry. And as far as the eye could reach was the glitter of the swaying points of the bayonets. And along the farmhouses were set tubs of water for the troops to drink and water the horses. David had some hardtack in his haversack, and he figured that it would go down better with some fresh water. While he and the other men were resting, David made a note in the little book.
30th of June, 1863. I never heard of any man, woman, or child being insulted. We traveled through a very fine section of country this day, and about 6 o'clock p.m. arrived at Emmitsburg, all tired. The sun came out and we had a nice day. During the day, we moved to the north of the town where our artillery had taken up position and had some works. For a man of 21, I feel 61 years old, my knees being stiff. It is with difficulty that I can walk.
thunderstorm came up in the afternoon, and consequently, Chunky and David had to put up their tent in pouring down rain. They made camp the best they could while talking about something they remembered seeing a ways back down the road. While the troops were marching through town, both men had noticed a nice bed of onions in a garden. Just about dusk, they returned to town and borrowed a few onions out of that garden. The next morning, the company left for Gettysburg before the pickets came in, and consequently, the two boyhood friends got into the first day's fight. The picket did not get there in time to get into it, but they got a good dose of the skirmish line on the second day. They were all wounded but one or two before the battle was over. Later, the men could only account for one man by the name of Rube who did not get hurt. David wrote down no date. He just started writing on a blank page in his diary.
As near as I could judge the time without a watch, it must have been about 9 o'clock before we left camp. We went very slow starting out. At the state line, we were informed that we were crossing into Pennsylvania. Our caps went up in the air and gave 3 cheers for our native state. The wagon train of the 1st Corps had blocked the road, and we were delayed for some time on account of it. Then we started across the field to the right, went through corn and wheat fields till we got to another road. We had just gotten into this road when we saw a horseman coming at a fearful gallop. I thought he was riding a white horse, but when we got to the head of the column, I saw it was a gray, and the lather on him must have been an inch thick. I also noticed that we began to step out faster, and it was not long until we saw another messenger with more orders from the front. I heard the boys say, "There's another long envelope coming."
Come to the left, come left, boom!
As the bugle called general orders, we met 5 or 6 of these before we reached Gettysburg. After we had received the second one, we got down nearly to a dog trot and kept that gait until we got to Gettysburg.
When the Pennsylvania line was reached and crossed, what glad shouts went up from the Keystone boys of "Home again!" Some of the men bent over and kissed the ground. While still marching, David wrote a single line in his diary.
"Alas, how many never left it, but lie now moldering in that silent city of her beloved dead."